And good morning, you're with Janine Preston of SA Commuter. I have Andre Vierdepol, historian, and Robert Forsyth, chairman and founder of Mr. Hills. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Good to have you.
I have historians in the studio. It's like we're having Elvis in the building.
Well, history is very important.
Tell me a little bit about the journey that you guys are taking together in terms of the Anglo-Boer War and trying to do a trail, as you call it. What do you call it?
Well, it's what we are developing is, we call it the Magaliesberg Battlefields Tourism Route. You know, what many people are not aware of is that during the Anglo-Boer War, which is often referred to these days as the South African War, many battles were fought in and around the Magaliesberg. And we've looked, and you know, some battles were fought in KwaZulu-Natal, and there were various people who did a fantastic job of developing battlefield tourism there. But we actually have far more potential to do the same thing in the Magaliesberg region, to get people interested in history, which I have found has really enriched my life, particularly the personal stories about the men who fought in these battles, and to use that then as a way of bringing economic development, job creation, by developing battlefield tourism based on these Magaliesberg battlefields. So that's what our Magaliesberg Battlefields Tourism Route project is really all about.
And Robert, I've noticed in the Mr. Hills environment, there's a lot of artifacts, which, especially in the Carnival restaurant, which indicates sort of the war era. Is that something that you've been interested in for a long time?
Yeah, this is an area where lots of interesting people have passed through. And I think Livingston camped right on the shores of the river here.
Oh, really?
On his way further north. And of course, King Mzilikazi came through here and established his kingdom here for a while and played havoc with the locals. In fact, a lot of the Tswana tribes could be thought of as Indibele now, because he left his people here and stole some. So all of this history passed through here. Then, of course, the Fort Trekkers arrived and there was competition for the land. And all the battles fought right here in the Magaliesberg. So it's interesting that we have the opportunity to tell these stories and revive the tourism in the area. Of course, historic towns as well, like Krugersdorp, burial grounds of the soldiers and the concentration.
Sounds more like a ghost tour than a history tour.
Well, it's funny that you should say that. a lot of people are very interested in the sort of paranormal when it comes to things like battlefield tours, stories about ghosts. It's a fascinating area. There is, as Robert has said, there are so many layers to the history.
I mean, where does this tourism route start? Does it start here? Does it start in Pretoria? Whereabouts do you see this beginning?
We'd like to think it starts here at Misty Hills.
I also like to think so.
and we're well placed for that, both for going west and east and north. Right around us are a number of battles within easy reach. And with a lot of historians now that can tell the story and explain what happened, and incredible men that found their way. For instance, Winston Churchill. We think there should be maybe a bicycle race named after him, because he rode a bicycle from Krugersdorp to the East Rand to give news.
Did he really?
Yeah, to give news to Lord Roberts. So, you know, such interesting history took place. Many VCs won in the area, and we're not making use of any of that information.
No, because a lot of those historians are going to die soon, or within that, because they're elderly, having fought those battles all those years ago. That makes them kind of 80, 90 years old. Well, so those stories die with them.
No, they're dead, all of them.
Are they dead already? Is it the 80?
120 anniversaries gone past. But, you know, the thing is, you're right, a lot of the historians that have studied it are old, and we need to pass on the information, and we need to establish the facts and help rectify some of the wrongs. For instance, many black people took part in the Anglo-Boer War, the South African War, and this has been hidden.
And it was never recognised.
Never recognised, and they weren't given official burials. The British this week made an apology for not affording them the proper rights of burial. I don't know if you know that.
No.
That was a British
Prime
Minister.
I'm just thinking, wow.
And not only did they do that in the South African War, they failed in the First World War, and then they failed again in the Second World War. So it's been a trilogy of failures.
But they did the same in Kenya as well. Oh, I did a story on Kenya and the war there, and they also had a few apologies to make in Kenya. So I see the British are apologizing all over the world.
I think there's, I mean, just the outrage of the concentration camps in South Africa. Many people have forgotten what happened, the tragedies that took place. In fact, more blacks died in the concentration camps than whites.
Wow.
But the story's not told, and I think things need to be rectified so that one can push forward with our history. And people
well, I know now that we're doing the sort of the domestic tourism is coming back in a big way, because we're struggling to get international tourism going again, which I believe will only be around about 2023, somewhere around there. Now that we're looking closer to home and inviting people to come and do things they've never done before, I think this is an awesome time to launch that route that will start at Misty Hills, because you have to stay somewhere amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And our stay here has been fabulous. Thank you. So I think if we start at Misty Hills, where do we go from here? Where's our next stop on this tour?
There are a couple of battles that are literally within half an hour of the Misty Hills Hotel. One of them was it was called the Battle of Kalkheuvel Pass. It was fought right where the Lion Safari Park is today, on the road to Burmistrum. And there were something like 4,000 British cavalry marching in a column and ambushed by about 600 Boers. This was beginning of June 1900, so shortly after Churchill's bicycle ride across Johannesburg, when the British had occupied Johannesburg. And very few people know about that battle. And it's quite a dramatic story. You know, when you picture in your mind's eye this column of cavalry moving down what was then just a narrow dirt track, and then suddenly, just at sunset, all hell breaks loose and they get attacked by the Boers there at Kalkheuvel. And one of the nice things about that, of course, is people can go there for the battle, and then they can also go to the Lion Safari Park.
But what do you see? If I understand there was a battle, but when I arrive in this area, what is there to see?
Yeah, that's a good question. And most of the time, all you really see is the topography. So there are hills to the left of the road and the right of the road.
And you use your imagination
for
the
rest. This is where you don't just need a guide, you need a storyteller to really bring that battle alive for people. You know, and explain that hill there is where the Scots Greys were sent up, and the Boers were over on that ridge, and the Canadians were here. Because again, there was a lot of international involvement in that British cavalry column, Australians, Canadians, etc. So what you see is really just the topography.
Wow.
You need someone who will really
Story and point out because the landscapes change. If you think of where the landscape was 120 years ago, even the hills, because of the animals and the animal migrations, they start to change the way the hills
particularly
are.
Particularly the vegetation. The experts tell us that the countryside was much more open.
Open,
120
I'm sure.
Years ago, there's been a lot of bush encroachment. So you need to explain that to people. The other battle, which was close to here, was the Battle of Dwarsvlei, which is just next door to Moropeng. There's a little restaurant there called the Brew House and Diner, which is right in the middle of the battlefield. And in a way, a similar kind of battle to Kalkheuvel. You had a British column, 1,300 soldiers coming from Krugersdorp going to Heckwood, and they were ambushed there at the ridge that runs across the road by about 160 Boers.
Wow.
And in fact, two Victoria Crosses were won at that battle, which is something really special.
I can't imagine any more scary than...
Very scary. And it was, as was quite often the case in the Anglo-Boer War, it was a case of the British being determined to save their guns, because guns being cannons. It was a terrible disgrace to lose your guns to the enemy. And there was a fiery Boer general by the name of Sarel Oosthuizen, who had a big red bushy beard and red hair and a personality to match. So they called him the Roy Bull of Krugersdorp. And he was determined to capture the two British cannons in that column. And he very nearly did, and was in fact mortally wounded at the end of the day in trying to do that. But the Victoria Crosses were awarded to British officers, in fact from the Gordon Highlanders, the Scottish regiment, who were trying to save the guns. So again, it's a dramatic battle, and it's nice in a sense that the topography is straightforward. So you can say the Boers were up there on that ridge, and you see these two low kopjes in the valley, that's where the Gordon Highlanders were, and the guns were there between them. But once again, we need to be training storytellers to really bring the battles alive.
To be able to give you that imagination.
Yeah.
That you can't tell on a cell phone.
Yeah. No.
And one of Britain's great generals, Lord Trenchard, was shot through the lung there.
Mm.
And went on to have the most incredible CV and military career after having his lung cut out. Probably in Krugersdorp.
So I was going to say, yeah. And where does the tour end? In other words, where does the route end? Is it a circle?
Yeah, it's really a network of routes. One of the things we really want people to do is start at Mr. Hills and then go to the other hotel in the group, which is Kedar Heritage Lodge north of Rustenburg. And the nice thing is you can cover a couple of battlefields on the way there and then come back north of the Michaelisburg and do a couple more. And Kedar Heritage Lodge, the entire hotel is themed around the...
And is it a hiking trail or is it a driving trail?
This is a driving trail. There are hiking...
What a disappointment.
there are...
Don't make people walk.
there are hiking trails as well. I do guided hikes for the Mountain Club and for the Johannesburg Hiking Club. We call them heritage hikes, where we will go and walk a battlefield for the whole day.
So is there plans to have almost a bus that takes people from here, that has a storyteller on the bus, that takes them off the bus, explains the next section, takes them off for lunch?
Before the pandemic, we did that.
We actually ran several bus tours.
Yeah, and we hope that will restart. And,
yeah.
I was going to say, that would be amazing.
Some of that. And then, the Gunners Association taking a busload of their gunners
on one
of these things. So people do it by themselves as well. They put their group
together. You able to look at... I've noticed that there's a trend towards getting an FM station that will allow you to tune into that FM station that takes you just on that route. So in other words, as you reach certain sections, it then says to you, okay, you are now at this point, perhaps a podcast series. It says, when you reach this point, here is the GPS setting. When you get there, get out of your car, take your phone with you, and listen to the story.
That's an excellent idea. I know that Peter Delmar did something like that for the N4 running from Pretoria up
past
Rustenburg. It was available as an app. I'm not sure if it's still out there. In today's world, with all the new technology and the new ways of doing things, I mean, that really is a wonderful...
Because with audio, one doesn't need a TV crew to create the ambience, because that loses the ambience.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've got a storyteller in your ear and in your pocket, and you're listening to it and you can see it, and it says on your right-hand side, facing that way, you will see a mountain. Imagine the Gaza, and you maybe have some sound in the background that's a series of volleys of shots.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a battle ensuing. Because when we went to Zimbabwe, we went where Cecil John Rhodes was and Matari. Mm. They had something very similar. There were a couple of speakers that sort of played the volley of gunfire and the Shona coming down.
Well, the problem is that this concept is relatively new to Gauteng and the Northwest
Province. So it's great to grow from this point.
Yes, absolutely. But to persuade the government that the sites need to be marked, we need to put up blue signs, and that we need a little summary of the battle to be there, and we're trying to work on that. And
that's amazing that you guys have put in this effort to make something work by yourselves without government funding is fabulous.
A lot of the sites are on private property as well, so we've got to persuade the property owner to to let us, you know, put something near the road or whatever.
And allow all these Balis, as they were, to come tramping onto his property.
Yeah, well, that could be as well. But, you know, this is history that's crucial, that had incredible people involved and history makers.
I completely agree, especially when we were talking about the paranormal. Mm. I mean, you could do this at night and say, right, there's a night tour that takes place, and you stop here and there, and you have the sounds on your podcast, you know?
My wife doesn't like me to say, but we actually took a picture of a ghost.
We have that.
Have you got that?
I've got that picture. Yeah. I published it in my magazine a few years ago. Somebody sent it to me, and I'm trying to remember who, but there you were with a ghost behind you.
It wasn't me, it was a god.
That's right. And it was a tree. I remember there was a tree in there.
So, interesting stuff. But people do come and they want to see and they want to go there.
I have to see that picture again. I know we published it. I've got to go through all my magazines and find it, because we did a story on that.
Well, when you go to Kedar, then you'll get the manager to show it to you.
Oh, is it up there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, if you would like, they will take you there at midnight, and you can possibly have an encounter
but
with a ghost.
There is
yourself.
A guy called Mark who does the Mystery Ghostbusters tour.
Yes,
Mark is fabulous, historian like yourselves, loves to tell the story and the history, and he's got this big cloak, and he has this cloak with his big hat, and he tells the story in a way that you get involved with the story, and you're standing at the grave with your ghost. He's got a ghost app that you load, and you can see if there are ghosts around, and I mean, it could be complete hogwash, but you're in the moment.
Well, I've been to Hampton, I think it's Hampton Court, and thousands of people gather in the passage to see this ghost that holds his head under his arm.
Really?
Yeah, every day.
Did you see it?
No, I couldn't get near.
Oh, no! But yeah, you got your own ghost right at home.
So, you know, I mean, it is a worldwide thing. People have an interest in the paranormal.
And I think what you guys are doing is so good for domestic tourism. Because we forgot in all our trips overseas that actually a lot of our tourism is right here. It's a drive from your home. You don't have to sit in tollgate. Sure. You don't have to stand at the airport. You are already here. You drive a few kilometers and you're in a different environment altogether. And you can start your tour from here. You're safe on the roads because you know the road. But pulling off the road suddenly gives you a completely different vision of that road that you probably drove on, like we ride motorbikes. We probably drove that road without looking at that mountain and seeing those red coats.
Yeah.
Without seeing the Boers hiding behind the bushes.
By the way, by the time the Boer War came around, the Second Boer War, there were no red coats.
Oh, really?
They were wearing khaki.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they'd learned something from the First Boer.
Because they used to stand out like a sore thumb.
With a white cross on the front, you know.
Let's just shoot point.
Yeah. Well, of course, the Boers got clever. They burnt the felt. So the felt was nice and black, and these British soldiers khaki stood out like, you know, stuck out like a sore thumb.
So they were always ahead of the game,
those Boers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they adapted constantly as the war progressed to find ways to continue to drag the war out. It was extremely frustrating for the British commanders. They sort of complained that the Boers were not playing by the rules. They were supposed to take a stand and fight.
You know, Churchill said that the Boer soldiers were the greatest cavalry since Genghis Khan.
I can imagine.
And, you know, the world hadn't seen anything quite like that.
Yeah. One of the things the Boers learned to do is to ride their horses at a gallop. And fire their rifles while they were moving at that speed with accuracy. And there were a couple of battles where, in fact, again, one of them is close to Mechanicsburg, the little town of Derby. There was something called the Battle of Vlakfontein, where General Jan Kemp set the veld on fire, smoke screen, and then hundreds of Boers just came charging through that smoke at a full gallop on their horses, firing from the saddle. And the British had just never seen anything like it. You know,
where did they bury all these British, or did they ship them back to the UK?
Buried them here.
Yeah, initially the British soldiers were buried on the battlefields where they fell, but then in the early 1960s, the Commonwealth War Graves Commission took a decision to consolidate the graves.
But where is these graves? I don't even know.
Burgersdorp Cemetery in Krugersdorp is a big one. Lots of British soldiers buried there. And then there's a little cemetery in the heart of Beersport area called the Rietfontein West Cemetery. It's a bit out of the way, but again, if you have a guide, it's a 5-minute walk from the road. 129 British soldiers buried there from half a dozen different battles.
And are they marked, or are they unmarked graves?
Well, they were marked, but there's a stealing of metal. So people are stealing the crosses, and it's a great pity there.
That is tragic, because that's our history.
It's a huge problem. And in fact, one of the things we are trying to persuade government to do is provide money to secure these cemeteries properly, like Burgershoek and Krugersdorp. Just to
prevent. Is that part of the route to go past that cemetery?
Very much so. And we really like to think of it as a network of routes. So the Mr. Hills is a starting point. You could start on the other end at Kiro Heritage Lodge. And then there are several different options, several different ways of doing the routes. And the whole idea is just to create route infrastructure, as Robert was saying, to have blue plaques at the battlefields with information boards, to have a little information center with panels and maps and that kind of thing, and create that infrastructure that then the tour guides and the tour operators, the adventure tourism people who do the more strenuous hikes and those kind of things as well, can start to develop that sort of local tourism.
And stop along the way and explain what's happening.
Absolutely.
Here.
And of course the area is full of great little pubs, little breweries.
They are like the brew house.
Eateries.
Yes.
This supports all of these people and keeps a lot of people in business.
And is there a sort of a move towards all of those people that have now gone out after breakfast in the morning, gone on along this route, to come back and share what they've seen? Perhaps have one of you doing a talk on the area that they've seen? Is there a move towards doing something like that?
Well, there are many different options, and that is definitely one of the ways in which it's
done. Because I couldn't imagine anything nicer than going out on the route, seeing all these places, and then coming back and sharing maybe a story of a grandfather or a story of a letter that I had or something with others that are in the room.
It is interesting how that sort of thing comes out.
Because then you have somebody to show, because it's been sitting in your drawer for him
those hours. I went along as a guest speaker recently with a tour guide who did a battlefields tour around the Magaliesberg. And one of the ladies on the tour said, I've got this old medal at home that belonged to my great-grandfather. And she found it. And it was what is called the Ankle Boere Oorlog Medal, which was the medal that was given to the Boers who fought. And in fact, was only given to them in the early 1920s. Because the story was that General Jan Smuts went to the Versailles Peace Conference and saw all these British soldiers wearing all their medals, and the Boers had nothing. And he said, this is not right. We need a medal to honor the Boers who fought in the Anglo-Boer War. And so they started applying, and they were awarded these medals. And she had no idea what the significance
of those
was
medals
of
were.
That old medal.
Because if you look at like the Kimberley Hole, has got that museum around with all the artifacts. I know that a lot of that was preserved and shown, but it has no. It's very hard to place them in a place of use. So in other words, if there was something like that around here that we could go to and say, this is from the Boer War, this was a rifle that they used, this was a picture of the gun. Do we have anything like that in this area?
Well, Kiro Heritage Lodge is, Robert has one of the world's largest private collections of Boer War artifacts. So it's everything from rifles.
So your background, your interest goes back quite far.
Well, it was really stimulated when the government said to me, why don't you buy Kruger's home? We can't take care of it anymore. So I bought his farm and home, and I've been fixing it up.
Oh, so that's where it started. Is that Kido? So Kido is actually Paul Kruger's home.
Yeah, the farm was called Buchenhoutfontein. And that really, he had the house in Pretoria when he was president, but that farm, that was his actual home. That's where.
So
he
that was
really
his
lived.
Home. Okay, I didn't know that.
And we've been busy putting all the relevant stuff back. We're busy with the concentration camps now. We're busy with women in the war. We're busy with children in the war. I don't know if people in South Africa don't know. I think the youngest child that was sent to a prisoner of war camp was 7 years old.
And it was because we saw them at we saw the monument at Bethesda, out near the dam, Gerib Dam.
Betuli,
yes, that's right, Betuli. Yes. And we saw the monument, and it had the names and the ages alongside
them. This was a, believe it or not, a seven-year-old who was sent as a prisoner of war to Bermuda. And he was not the only child. There, I think, were dozens of boys.
To Bermuda?
Yeah. Under the age of 10.
And people don't know, there were prisoner of war camps in Bermuda, British.
Well, it was psychological warfare. The British Empire saying to the Boers, we are so big and powerful and our empire is so huge, we will capture you and we will send you literally halfway across the world. So they sent him to Bermuda,
goodness,
to India, to Ceylon, St. Helena.
And interestingly enough, has anyone in their families tried to find them? Have they come back? Does anybody know?
Yeah, people have been on tours. A lot of them are dead and died in those countries. Of course, you had to sign allegiance to the King of England to come back to South Africa.
Yeah, many of them did that. They signed the oath of allegiance to King Edward VII.
Have we got copies of those allegiances?
Yes, and you'll find that stuff at Kira.
That is amazing. So we've got our own museum in the form of a hotel.
Yeah, and you find even the newspapers that were written in the prison of war camps, both the Boer war camps and the British war camps. Prisoner of war camps. Most people don't realize that there were Brits put into war.
Goodness
and of course, of Churchill's the most famous occupant of the prisoner of war camp in Pretoria.
And where is that based?
There was a prisoner of war camp for British officers at what was called the Staatsmodel School, quite close to the centre of Pretoria. And then the Boers had another big prisoner of war camp at Waterval, north of Pretoria. Oh dear. The British were also kept as prisoners of war in large numbers. In fact, one of the areas at Kido Heritage Lodge is called the Prisoner of War Lounge, and it has hundreds of artifacts from both Boer and British prisoners on display. You can imagine being stuck in a prisoner of war camp, some of them literally for 2.5 years. They had absolutely nothing to do. They made things. They made things out of wood and bone and beautiful, you know, little miniature shoes and
One of the stories that came out of Batoon was, in fact, there was a family there who owned the local hotel, and they created tortoiseshell combs out of the tortoises because it had a huge tortoise population. And these British they killed all these tortoises and made these tortoiseshell combs, which they sent overseas,
sure,
and annihilated the entire tortoise population. And only now is the tortoise population starting to regrow after they had been destroyed by these tortoiseshell manufacturers.
They must have been good eating as well.
I would assume they would have been. But it's only now that they've started growing back, and we heard that story from the owner of the hotel in Batuli. It was quite an interesting. So he was and he gave us a book on the history
was that,
of the area.
Anthony Hockey?
I can't remember. It was a while ago.
Because I know there is a wonderful hotel in Batuli that is just steeped in the.
Then
the
that's
history.
Probably there is only one hotel because it's not the biggest town. I think it only has one hotel, one bottle store, one supermarket. That's it. There is nothing else. And then of course it's got the museum. Not the museum, the statue that commemorates the concentration camp.
Yeah, it was a big concentration there. Of course, Krugersdorp had a huge concentration camp. And there was a white camp and there was a black camp. It was a terrible aspect of the Anglo-Boer War, the terrible loss of life in those camps. And of course, going along with that was the so-called scorched earth policy. Where it got to the point where the Boers were fighting guerrilla warfare, what they called fechten en vluchten. In other words, you fight when it suits you, and then you flee and you hide away. And then you re-emerge to fight again when it will be to your advantage. The British started to burn all of the farms, destroy all the crops and the livestock, burn all the farmhouses. So virtually all of the farmhouses in the Magaliesberg region were destroyed during that phase of the war.
Here's an interesting question. What was the point of war?
Well, that's a very good question.
It was gold.
Yeah, that's the short answer.
It was gold. Johannesburg at the time was one of the richest cities in the world. Had huge potential. And the British couldn't bear the thought that they didn't own it. And that it was a few Boer farmers that were in charge.
Really?
Yeah. So, Rhodes, great entrepreneur, a great industrialist, he already had some Chinese on a ship. He wanted to bring them out to mine. And Kruger was saying, no Chinese. We're not having any Chinese. And these people were determined to push ahead. So they had the disastrous Jameson raid, as you remember. There were a few Rhodesians came down and thought they'd take on the Boer army.
Oh, my word.
And they ended up getting a death sentence, some of the officers, including a future premier of the Cape, Jameson. And then they had to buy their release. So Britain, you know, was... They just like holding on to India. They were pretty determined this is where their money came from, opportunity and whatever. So it took a while for them to be persuaded. And 10 years later, South Africa was having elections, was it?
Well, yeah, self-government, the Union of South Africa, 1910. And now you had prominent Boer generals like Louis Botha and Jan Smuts running the country. So that question is, what was the war really all about?
It's a question they're still trying to answer.
Because it was so unnecessary. So very unnecessary.
And another question, who won it?
Well, obviously...
Who really won?
From a military point of view, the British. But you often hear the saying, the British won the war, but the Boers won the peace. Because 10 years later, they were once again running the country. And in fact, they were running the whole of South Africa.
The British or the Boers?
The Boers. The Boers, once the Union of South Africa came into being. There were arrogant and impatient men driving the process. Sir Alfred Milner was one of the main culprits, the British High Commissioner in South Africa. He was not prepared to wait for progressive elements within the Boer republics to bring about change. So he forced Paul Kruger into a corner, and Kruger made the mistake of actually declaring war on the British, which gave them the excuse that they needed to invade the Boer republics.
There was a genuine stupidity. The Boers should have fought a guerrilla war right from the beginning. It should have never been a standing army fighting a standing army, because the British had endless amounts
supplies,
of troops they could
yeah.
bring. I mean, a guerrilla war would have been like America and Vietnam. Unwinnable for the Americans, and it would have been unwinnable for the British. So, you know, we fought a bit like gentlemen, and that shouldn't have happened. We should have just taken them out and moved. I mean, the British would have not known what was going on. But it was a war that cost the British so much money that I think one can say they lost, because they couldn't afford it. And then they were finding themselves arming for Germany after the war, preparing for the First World War. So it's.
When was the war fought?
Okay, well, it broke out on the 11th of October, 1899, and it finally ended on the 31st of May, 1902. So two and a half years. A lot of lives lost. Tremendous loss of life. Funnily enough, the total number of British soldiers who died was about 25,000, but only about a third of those were in combat. The rest died of disease.
Really?
Typhoid was one of the biggest killers, British soldiers drinking contaminated water and that sort of thing. But again, by far, most of the lives that were lost were civilian lives from the concentration camps and so on.
Those were mainly
women and children,
old people, and the biggest number was black.
My goodness.
And a lot of men, black men, they put their families in the concentration camps to force them to work on the mines, because they want to get that gold out.
Yeah, recent research has shown
worldwide gold is a bad thing.
Yeah, that's the the black concentration camps, the British were actually using them as forced labor camps, as Robert says.
Slavery.
To compel, because the white camps were terrible, but at least the white civilians were given food and tents. In the black camps, they were given nothing. They had to earn money to buy food. And so, hence, the black men who were essentially forced.
Humans
to,
are terrible.
To go and work in the mines. And
humans
stuff.
Just have such a such a need to destroy, especially other humans.
But look, we do try also to focus on the positive aspects, which is when you look at the individuals who fought on both sides, how in this extreme situation, a lot of these men rose to the challenge. They were survivors.
But I also think war is terrible. War is a terrible thing. In whichever the loss of life, and usually it's the ones who started are not the ones on the front line. They're the guys
very
who don't
so.
Even know what the situation is like in the front. They have no idea.
That's true.
If you look at the trenches in the First World War, the generals weren't in those trenches going over and being shot.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how you now have a route, which is a tourism route, but it helps people to understand where they came from. So if you look at your past, you actually have a very good idea of your future, because you can learn from your mistakes. You can learn from the wins, if you like, the things that you did win in the past, and why not focus on those?
Yeah, and as I say, just to see how, you know, both Boers and Brits, when placed in these extreme situations, they made it. They got through it.
They got through it.
And they actually, the men who were actually fighting, came to respect each other. So you read some remarkable stories. One of the most famous books written in the Boer War was Denys Reitz's book, Commander. And he was involved at the Battle of Nooitgedacht, which again is not far from here, in the Magaliesberg. And he tells about how he shot a British soldier through the thigh and then walked past him. And the soldier was busy dressing his own wound with the bandages they all carried. And he starts chatting to the Nasrats and showing him pictures. See, here's my wife. These are my children. And they have a bit of a chat. And the one has just 5 minutes before was shot the other one. But there was a respect there. Even though they were enemies, they respected each other as combatants, on both sides of this conflict.
So what's the way forward? Before we close, what is the... Where do you see this route? How do you see it marketed? Who do you see being on it?
Well, we hope that we can create enough interest that historians will take it up and start working on it. The government will see that there's an opportunity here and invest in it. And that not only local tourism, but international tourism, that we can encourage the Canadians, the Australians, the New Zealanders, and all the
to come and share the story.
Because they all took part. It was the first war for the Australians and the New Zealanders, and to them it's a big event. Probably the first international war for the Canadians too.
Good heavens.
So, you know, we would like to see them all coming and reliving their past and seeing, you know, what happened and how we got where we are and how we can adapt it for the future.
That's awesome. And your book, tell us just in closing, me a little bit about your book.
We're involved in several projects. The book you're referring to is something that was funded by the National Lotteries Commission. It's a guidebook to museums and monuments of the Western Magaliesberg region. And the whole idea is just to be giving people specific information about sites of interest they can go and visit. We've included details of various places they can stay while they're doing that. But I'm also involved in writing booklets on specific battles. So, for example, the Battle of Nooitgedacht, the battles of Silkaart's Neck, west of Hardegersburg Dam. And there are other people doing similar kind of things.
And where can they get hold of you?
Ah, okay, good question. The best, I think, is just to send me an email. AndreVierdepol@gmail.com.
And the spelling of that is?
Yes. Good question. AndreVierdepol@gmail.com.
And do you have a website?
Well, what we have recently done, again with some funding from the Lotto, is launched our Magali Arts Facebook page.
Nice.
That's a very good way to keep in touch with what we're doing. So if you just, the company has a long name. It's Mkhali Arts and Heritage Development Company, MPC. But if you just search on Facebook for Mkhali Arts, M-O-G-A-L-E, Arts, you will find our Facebook page.
And I'll obviously tag it on the, we'll tag it as well on our post of having met you. And Robert, how about you?
Well, you know, I think we really need to get people to understand how unique this event was. I mean, it's always surprising us. We discovered that there was a black general and king in the Western Transvaal who took his people to war and was never beaten by the Boers. He won every battle.
Really?
And his story has been hidden. It wasn't in British interest to tell it. It wasn't in
the Boer
interest to tell it. And all the promises that the British made him, they reneged on.
Oh my goodness.
At the end of the war. So, I mean, isn't his story worth telling?
And, I absolutely think it is.
So we think all of these...
There's a story up in the carnival as well that tells the story of a woman general.
Oh, yeah, a queen.
Ah, Montetisi.
Yes. So I read her story last night as well.
Yeah, these people all came up. Yeah, this was a fascinating time. And you've got to separate the legend there. They said that people used to say she fed her men her own breast milk. You know, I mean, this is obviously nonsense. They said she was a very ugly woman, but Moffat said she was beautiful. So, you know, one's got to dig through the
absolutely
all the nonsense and find out what the story is. But she was also a great leader. So we've got our own Boadicea in South Africa.
Wow.
We should tell the story of all of these people.
And they can obviously reach you at Mr. Hills.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Hills is available on a website. It's also on Facebook.
Absolutely.
It's pretty much, it's Raleigh Hotels, isn't it? It's raleigh.co.za.
If you say so. But Mr. Hills does find us there. And of course, Kedar.
And Kedar, I think, is something we need to visit and certainly put and have a look at the history that's there. Especially, I didn't know it was Paul Kruger's house.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
That's obviously a big secret.
It was a big farm. His farm was about 2,500 hectares. Kedar is part of that at this stage, but there are these four absolutely amazing restored Kruger farmhouses, each one of them from a different period in the history of the Old Transvaal Republic, different architectural style. Of course, the grandest is the house that Paul Kruger built for himself in 1873 when he was a wealthy man. But all four houses, just fascinating to see. Yeah, the different
and
styles.
To think that he never had a working toilet, he had to go outside.
Really?
Even
in
his president. Yeah. And that his bath was a tin tub. And the maid had to pour the water over him. I mean, interesting times.
Very. And tell me, is Kedar a little bit ahead of that? In other words, if we stay there, or do we get a tin tub and we go to the bathroom outside?
It's palatial. It's
that's so sad. Kedar, I hear I was going to relive the whole thing.
Very comfortable.
I'll give you a night in the museum if you like. Might be a bit frightening.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope we can visit one of the sites together with you and do another interview, just talking through the actual route, because I think that in itself, you both are very knowledgeable historians, and obviously not by professorism, by profession, but by choice.
Yeah, when the history bug bites you, it bites you back.
Oh my goodness.
It bit me about 10 years ago, and it just sucks you in. It's just fascinating to learn about all these things that happen.
No, thank you so much. It's really Andre Vierdepol and Robert Forsyth of Misty Hills. It's been a real pleasure, and thank you so much for spending time with me.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. This interview was brought to you by Janine Preston of SA Commuter.